This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Okay, here we go, sports fans.
Afternoons on The Score.
We need to have a conversation with Dave O'Brien. If we break bad on the White Sox, that's one thing.
But when guys like Dave do it,
I mean, it hurt, man.
Yeah, the White Sox invent ways to lose games.
Oh, man. The trip to Chicago could be coming at the perfect time.
Dave, why you got to do us like that, man?
Guys, it's just a pleasure to be in Chicago, first of all. Always is. Hey, we got our own problems with the Red Sox trying to turn things around, and I think it probably will come at the expense of the White Sox, unfortunately for you guys.
You sure about that? You sure about that? I'm angrier than I'm even letting on about this.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
This should be played at high volume, preferably in a residential area.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
And the White Sox lead it 2-0. It is 4-0, 6-0, 7-0, 9-1.
I hope they kick the snot out of the Red Sox.
10-1. And it's 11-1. And the White Sox are blowing out the Red Sox tonight.
Get him a body bag! Yeah!
I hope Dave O'Brien's got to wear that quote forever.
Yeah, the White Sox invent ways to lose. Invent ways to lose. Invent ways to lose.
I mean, it's a horrible night. We know it. Everybody knows it there, you know? And it's a horrible night in every aspect of the game.
Excuse me.
We got to show up tomorrow and play better.
2-2, bottom of the ninth inning, and here we go.
Bowman into left field, and the White Sox are going to walk it off in the ninth. Let's go!
Yeah, the White Sox invent ways to lose. Invent ways to lose.
Care to revise your statement, sir?
What? Do you want to change your bullshit story, sir?
And the Red Sox have a lot of things they need to figure out here.
And the White Sox win their first series of the season. Play that music.
Yeah, the White Sox invent ways to
win. Win, 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 win.
Curve everything goes.
Win, 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 win.
You like apples?
Yeah.
How do you like them apples?
The official adventures of
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score.
That's right. My feud with the White Sox was put on a 72-hour hold. I teamed up with White Sox fans on this and said, stay out of White Sox business, Dave O'Brien.
Yeah, man.
Just leave us alone.
They can't. You're on the schedule.
Just leave us alone. We got enough problems.
But, dude, what a difference a few days make. I mean, Friday, we were living in the space. They had just lost 8 in a row. They didn't lose 8 in a row last year. Even when they started 3-22,
yeah,
they didn't lose 8 in a row. So it was ugly. It was bad. And it was sad. And teams, broadcasters were laughing at them. And then they go out and they take 2 out of 3. Chase Meidroth is here. Has a debut weekend to remember against his old team.
Yeah, that's pretty nice.
It's pretty cool, man. I mean, that dude debuted on Friday. Reached base 4 times. Saturday, he's on deck watching Brooks Baldwin with the walk-off and gets to celebrate. And Sunday, he breaks up Garrett Crochet's no-hitter. That's pretty cool.
That's a nice weekend.
I agree.
Family's there. Brooke Fletcher's going to find him in the stands and talking to him and stuff. Shout out to Brooke Fletcher. I'm a huge fan of her. She's good people. I had a chance to work with her over the last couple years. She's a wonderful addition to what they're doing with the broadcast. And our guy McDoink is doing a great job on that too. I appreciate them being a part of it.
Yeah, he is. There's a lot going on in that broadcast.
There is.
There's a lot happening.
I think it's working, though. I think it's working.
There's a lot of interviews on Friday. I missed it. Tanny, you said there was a lot of people that they kept interviewing on Friday.
Yeah, they do the Friday night all-access thing where it's like anyone they can talk to, they will talk to. So they're in the dugout talking to players, talking to the manager, in the stands, talking to family and friends. You know, but there's Connor McKnight all by himself out on the concourse.
Yeah.
Not allowed to have anyone around him. Too handsome. So they have to barricade everyone away from him.
Too lanky. He's too tall, too handsome, too lanky. They can't have anyone around Connor. That's how just how it goes.
Lawrence,
them's the rules.
Lawrence, there's been a lot of conversation about White Sox ownership since, of course, Justin Ishbia had bought in, and John Greenberg wrote the story in The Athletic a few weeks back that kind of broke that news. And the situation has been that people know the Ishbias,
Justin and Matt,
right? Both brothers.
More
Justin than Matt, and we'll get to that in a second. Yes, but like they had been offered the chance to buy the Twins and bailed on that
because there was a whole bunch of debt that was associated with the Twins, even though their valuation was pretty high.
Yeah, and Bob Nightingale had reported last Sunday in his column that the White Sox weren't selling anytime soon, that Jerry Reinsdorf wasn't selling anytime soon. And it was an opportunity to clarify, which I did on Hit and Run this morning, and I know people did it during the course of the week, that nothing has really changed, that the Ishbias are still like the probable controlling owners in waiting.
Mm-hmm.
As Jerry decides whether to sell before he passes, or more likely his kids sell once he passes.
It's weird because the Ishbias are clearly buying up stuff, and that's good for them. But if you think that there is a hostile takeover that's getting ready to happen, it's not. They currently, I mean, I guess if you said the Reinsdorf family and the Ishbias probably have this around the same amount. Or maybe the Reinsdorf as a family have more?
Well, we
or
can,
control of more,
we can,
right?
Yes, we can clarify all of that very directly in a moment, which I think would be good. But first, let's hear Bob Nightingale this morning with Mully and Brad Biggs?
Biggsy.
Mully and Biggs this morning.
His
Bob Nightingale
Brad
was on.
Biggs.
And he addressed his report and what is the situation with the Ishbias who were going to buy the Twins and then did not and instead bought in a little more to the White Sox.
Ishbia's been trying to get this franchise for years, you know, at least 5 to 10 years. And Jerry Reinsdorf would continually say, it's not for sale, not for sale. Quit, you know, quit asking me. And so what Ishbia did was just buy up everybody's, you know, minority shares and say, okay, let me put myself in position. I think he pivoted from Minnesota to the White Sox simply because the reason everybody else is nobody thought the Twins' price is worth it. They're over $450 million in debt. They thought the 1.7 is too high. So they say, why go to a losing place? Well, I'll just try to wait for the White Sox. And Jerry Reinsdorf's friends have said he's got no interest in selling. He loves baseball, still loves the White Sox. Why sell something? We enjoy it. Not you know, you certainly don't enjoy the losing, but you know, as long as you're having fun with it, enjoy going to ball games, go in and hang on to it, you know, until your health does allow you to.
Everyone that I have talked to around this that I've asked is kind of said the same thing, that nothing's changed. That this is how it's going to be. Jerry is not out here trying to get rid of the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
He still would like to be in charge of the White Sox, and he's going to be in charge of the White Sox no matter how many shares the Ishbias buy up. He is the governor of this franchise.
Well, that's the thing. His control has never been tied to how much or how little he owns of the White Sox. It is an ironclad partnership in which he is the managing partner, a voter of one, no matter how much he owns. As it stands right now, he owns 20% of the White Sox. He started with a single-digit total back in the day and was still the managing partner with a single-digit total.
That's a pretty good deal.
Well, because there was a lot of limited partners. There was a ton of limited partners. Jerry's total has raised now to 20%, and he continues to be the managing partner. There is a fund that is controlled by Michael and Jonathan Reinsdorf, and this is complicated. The brothers don't own these shares, but they control these shares. It's an investment fund that they put together, and they started buying up shares about 4 years ago. And they based their purchase price on a franchise value of $1.8 billion at the time. So the investors who got in have already made a profit because it's the franchise is now valued at $1.85 billion. But anyway, so the fund controlled by the Reinsdorfs, that's 30%. The Suns control that fund. Again, they don't own it, but they control it via fund.
But the idea that the Reinsdorf family has at least control of 50% of the shares of the White Sox is significant.
Correct. The remaining limited partners, there were once more than 60 limited partners. Okay. This is all, they were before when Bill Veeck. When he owned the team.
Just can't help himself, right? Can't help himself.
We've done it enough.
Everything's fine. You know, okay. Here we are.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Can't help himself.
I'm sorry. So when Veeck.
Win, win, win.
So when Bill Veeck sold to Jerry, it was down to like 30. There's now like 8, maybe 9 limited partners. That percentage is 15%. So 15% for the limited partners, 30% for the fund controlled by Michael and Jonathan, 20% for Jerry. Justin Ishbia and Matt Ishbia, his partner, have 35%. That is a lot. They have 35%, and this is the maximum percentage which the current ownership structure allowed the Ishbias to accumulate through the recent offer to all the remaining limited partners. So like Bob Nightingale said, Justin Ishbia has been a limited partner for a long time, but...
And he's just kind of slowly been making moves, and there have been a lot of people that have been disillusioned. Like some of the limited partners were like, I've had enough. Like, I'm ready to,
they got out.
Cash out.
They did. They sold to the brothers or they sold to Justin Ishbia, who has the most he's allowed to make, which is 35. So now the question really is, when will the Ishbias take control? There is no firm timeline on this. Nobody knows.
I don't think that they're going to have control while Jerry is alive.
I think that is almost assuredly true. So whether it's 3 years, whether it's 5 years.
And maybe in 5 years, every time I see a picture or video of Jerry, he looks real healthy.
He looks pretty good. He
looks real damn healthy. So if maybe in 5 years he's like, all right, I'm out of it. But I can't see anything happening before that unless there is some sort of health crisis that he is under. And even still, this is one of those things where no matter who I talk to in this, it's Jerry's not selling. Look, you guys should stop talking about it. He's not selling.
But it does feel like there's a bit of a cold war going on with some of this info getting out. Because there's another, it was part of that CNBC report the other day.
We're going
to go to Shane in a second because Shane has done some digging around that. But there's a cold war because then Bob Nightingale comes out and says, Jerry's not selling. When a lot of people are like, oh, the Ishbias are going to buy. And are they already buying? And Bob, and maybe we'll see if there's others, come out and say he's not selling. So I think there's a bit of a cold war, and maybe that's the Ishbias' way or just the news cycle's way or the public's way of putting some pressure on Jerry to consider it. Shane, anything to add to what I just shared based on your digging?
Well, I think the important thing is here is that this is Justin's project. The White Sox are Justin's project. What I was told by someone is that this is the only stake that the Ishbia brothers own together in which Justin has more money involved and more control. So whether Matt is a ghost investor or he's there just because they do things together, This is the first time in the history of the Ishbias as team investors that Justin is in charge of this one.
So Matt is the guy in charge of the Phoenix Suns, the Phoenix Mercury. Like, he's the first name, but Justin is the baseball guy. Justin is the baseball guy who's got the crazy estate that he's building up on the North Shore, loves baseball, is at Michigan State, where he donated a huge amount of money and waxed poetic about baseball. So this is, the dream is that it's Justin's baby, but it's just not his baby yet.
It's not, and I don't think it's going to be for a while. It's weird because...
The 35% is news.
Yeah.
So for people to understand that they've bought up as much as they are allowed to buy.
I think he's going to be the next owner of the White Sox. I just don't think that if people... Here's what I want people to understand. If you thought listening to all of this conversation over the last few months that Justin Ishbia was going to come in and save you right now as a White Sox fan, get that out of your mind. You've got the owner that you've got. And until that changes, because I don't think that even though the Suns are buying up, I don't think that they're as invested figuratively and literally in the White Sox as they are in the Bulls. I just don't think that you're going to be saved by, here's a guy riding in on a pile of money that's going to spend that money and save the White Sox.
No.
I've heard that there have been plenty of Justin has tried to work this and say, hey, I'm willing to give me a little bit of responsibility and let's get some things going. And he's not getting that.
Here's the one thing I'll say, though, that could mean a transfer of sorts. And to what percentage, we'll have to figure out. But like, if as they're getting a stadium built, which continues to be Jerry's dream on the 78, you know, to get that stadium built, if as that's happening, he needs the Ishbia's money and or presence, they could do something
power
called,
play it where they're saying, all right, well, we'll give you the actual money that you need.
Correct.
But we would like to have control or a seat at the table on this.
I was advised that it's called a limited management agreement. An LMA is one of the ways you could do this, where the Ishbias and the Reinsdorfs could agree on all sorts of things, and the transfer of sale could happen at any point in the stadium process. So it could happen before, could happen during, could happen after, but the LMA means they could join forces of sorts to help get the stadium done.
You know why I think this timeline might be a little bit more accelerated than, Lawrence, you think it is? Over the last 6 months, this is my favorite part about that 35%, or I know Speaks and I had different numbers. I heard closer to 40, probably somewhere in the middle there, or maybe it is maxed out at 35.
I heard 35 because that's where it maxed out.
Okay. It was a six-month period, or maybe a little bit less, that the Ishbia's investment stake went from 6% to where it is now. They're not messing around. This is something they want now.
I understand that, Shane, but there have also been a lot of White Sox limited partners over the last 5 years that have just tired
not
of the
serious,
entire process.
Right, not
but the limited partners don't have a say in this, though. They don't really have a say. They're just limited partners. They get to hang around and be like, hey, we own part of the White Sox, but they don't have any say.
No, I'm saying them selling their shares.
Yeah.
Like, that's why, like, maybe it is accelerated, but I don't think it's accelerated just because Justin wants it. I think that there were active sellers who were limited partners that were like, I'm tired of all of this, and if I can get back what I spent, or maybe a little bit more.
Maybe it's time. But here's the other thing. There was an inflection point here, which is the Pollad family trying to sell the Twins to Ishbia. And the Ishbia's like being able to use that against some of these other limited partners or some of the Reinsdorf sons and say, hey, look, we might buy the Twins. We don't want to buy the Twins, but if we need we want to buy a baseball team.
Yeah.
So can we buy in here? We got to make a choice. We got to tell them. So all of a sudden there was pressure, and pressure can bust pipes. So deadlines can make deals. So having the Twins deadline, I think, ended up making this happen the way that it has to this point.
What I do think from people that I have talked to is whether it is continued Reinsdorf ownership, leadership, or Justin Ishbia, I don't think they're going to be at 35th and Shields as long as I would like for them to be,
no,
which would be forever.
I think that stadium on the 78 is going to happen. I think it's going to happen. Whether with how much public money, we don't know. But I think the Ishbias have enough money to make it happen on their own or with whatever portion Jerry's able to get. And it will also be something that Jerry can feel good about because it's
a legacy piece.
It's his legacy piece.
But I would only push back this much against that in saying that he took whatever was going on with people who don't want the 78 to happen and state money and say, oh, okay, I'll reverse this with the Bulls. He's getting his legacy piece near the United Center.
You're right, and there's a lot of good that's being done around the United Center.
I'm actually on board with that.
I know you are.
And that's rare.
I know you are. But his baseball heart wants to leave the... He said it. Didn't he say he wants to leave it better than when he left?
They could do that in Arlington Heights,
When's he going to start?
He's on the case.
But for someone who was informed by the Brooklyn Dodgers leaving, like I why would you want to be the guy that took the White Sox out of the South Side? I know it's semantics, really, and it's not that far per se, but still, the optics of the White Sox are no longer the South Side baseball team.
And I think you're absolutely right. That is in his heart, and he has a baseball heart and a romance of it. And they would be set up for the next 20, 30 years to potentially be a profitable and healthy organization with that new ballpark, in my opinion.
But they could also do that with the Bears in Arlington Heights. They could do that in Matteson. There's a lot of they could do it in Naperville. There's a lot of places where they could do it where I think it's maybe less hurdles than what they would have to jump over to do it at the 78.
Especially considering
the timetable.
Yeah, but Jerry,
he's a good host.
Jerry gets what he wants. Historically, and I think if he wants it on the South Side, he's going to try and find a way.
I'm with Tanny though. Like the idea of leaving Bridgeport is hurtful.
And remember, I was all for when they first saw the renderings of this 78, I was like, man, you get to capture some of these fringe fans and some casual fans, and you can maybe expand and grow your fan base. I thought that was great. But then after talking to some people and going down the South Side and thinking about it and thinking about all the times going down there, like I couldn't imagine that. You know, like it just. I don't know if it's more, doing more harm than good.
Look, I'll give you from my own personal experience, and this isn't apples to apples, so I want to be clear about that. I really, really like Wintrust. I really like it.
Where DePaul now plays, but you miss.
It doesn't feel like home at all. It doesn't feel like there is.
Of course not.
There's no warm connection to it.
How could it?
It is way more convenient for me. I can be from Hyde Park to Wintrust in 7 minutes from my house. So that's good. And I've gone to a bunch of games this year and I'll go to a bunch of games next year. But there's something missing and it's hard to describe. And I feel like if they do this 78 thing, it'll be the same thing where it's like, yeah, technically it's south. It's south of Roosevelt. It's technically the South Side. It's in the South Loop. But there is something about the White Sox being the team of Bridgeport and representing the South Side in a way that
it wouldn't be. No, I totally understand.
It wouldn't feel the same.
Okay, so do you prioritize nostalgia over either the health of your franchise or making sure your franchise is as relevant as the other power players?
See,
because I wouldn't blame you if you did.
But Shane, I don't think that them being at 35th and Shields is why their organization is unhealthy. I think it is a convenient excuse that's going to get a lot of people to go amen and hallelujah
hey, Lawrence,
because of all sorts of nefarious reasons.
I understand what you're saying, and I think it is the location of where they are is not the problem with how they've done things as an organization. That is undoubtable. But I do think that much like hiring Tony La Russa to right a wrong, there's part of Jerry that wants to right the what I perceive as a wrong myself.
Not turning the ballpark to the direction that it should have been turned.
Not putting it at 16th in Michigan or 16th in Indiana when there was nothing there in the thriving, just across the highway from Soldier Field spot that would have had them dominate attendance-wise with ease as long as they were a functional baseball team. I think they missed their chance to do that in the early 90s.
I think they've missed their chance on a lot of different things.
I know,
things.
But I think he wants to right the wrong.
That's going to be difficult. And the same thing as I said about the Bears. I think it'd be easier for Jerry to go to the governor and ask for a personal loan versus him getting the state house to give him money for a new thing.
And hey, man, if it works out the way that the righting of the wrong with La Russa worked out, then that'd be a problem for everybody.
Not great.
Back to your mean Mercedes.
Poor your mean.
And like,
burger.
Lawrence, you know, because you've been around a few ballparks, Speaks, you have too. Like, you know how much I love PNC Park in Pittsburgh. Like, it's like that's 10 out of 10. You nailed it. You captured the vibe. It's a beautifully placed
there
park.
There you go. That's not the same spot as Three Rivers where they used to play.
But
is
that
it?
Is the exception to the rule because, like, this is just me. You go up to the Target Field in Minnesota. Not quite as special. It's fine. I don't know how Twins fans feel about it. I know how they felt it when it first got built because they kind of had to change their team around the way the ballpark was playing.
But what, like, you want that to be on the side of the Homer Dome, the Hanky Dome?
Well, I'm just saying you lose some of the essence of what, like, it's hard to capture what, like, this idealistic image of what a downtown ballpark is going
to
be like.
And can I just say that it speaks to my point on this?
Yeah, when you were talking about Wintrust, that's when I started to think about it.
That there's the Pittsburgh Pirates in the perfect area with the perfect ballpark, and it has not solved their problems as an organization.
Because Bob Nutting is brutal. Of course. Of course. But it's still one of the great ballparks in America.
It's my favorite. It's my absolute favorite.
When do
the White Sox go there? I should go there.
Yeah, I've never been.
I think it's the...
You haven't been?
Yeah, I'm embarrassed. Every time it comes
Between
up.
This and your PCA thought, I think I should be hosting Hit and Run from now on.
How dare you? My PCA thought has more legs than you think, sir. I disagree about that. I think you're going to go with Predator.
You know what? It doesn't need any legs. When you hit home runs, you don't have to have legs.
His legs are so good, he should
Free
learn how to
PCA!
Bunt. He should learn how to
Free
bunt.
Free PCA!
His legs are so good. Glad we did this.
Sox are there middle of July.
When are they are?
When are the Cubs there?
Sounds like a perfect couple of days off for you, boy.
It's a weekend series, too.
Oh, even better. Now I don't have to take days off.
Yeah, I'd like you to.
Theoretically.
I'd like you to.
All right. Well, then, is that around SEC Media Days, too? I'd probably have to go do that. It's a good idea. When we come back, there's Cubs stuff, too.
Contract stuff.
That we need to discuss. Stick around. You're listening to The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Hi, Boog.
We're a very important radio show, you know?
Yeah, you are. So very important.
I mean, do people have any idea?
That was my sincerity there. You want me another reading of that?
Yeah.
I'm going to count you down, okay? In three, two, one.
So very important.
Oh, perfect. That feels nice.
Yeah.
Afternoons on The Score.
It's a huge day. I mean, it homers off Glasnow and Trinan, just not easy to do, you know, and then the triple. So just a big offensive day against some really good pitching. And it's good, you know, just from Pete's perspective, off to a little bit of a slow start, but have a game where, you know, you're kind of the guy that drives the bus offensively, so to speak. That's a really good thing and great for your confidence.
Last night. Well, let's talk about tonight. The Cubs continue their road trip in San Diego against the Padres. Pre-game coverage begins at 8:05 p.m. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer will be on the call for first pitch at 8:40 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network.
So last night on Sunday Night Baseball, as PCA was doing very well, and you know, there was a lot of topics. As always, it's kind of a talk show. They talked about the possible PCA extension. We touched on that with Sahadev Sharma earlier, as well as the Kyle Tucker extension. But Buster Olney then brought up the Justin Steele injury, elbow surgery out for the year. Woof. And brought up a possibility on who the Cubs might be able to trade for. Let's listen.
But the bottom line is the Cubs will be without their ace for the rest of the year. And when you look at the trade market, there could be some really interesting options developing.
All right, you've intrigued us. Where are we going?
Sandy Alcantara of the Marlins is the first name you think of in the trade market. Look, the Marlins demonstrated last year, if you come to them with a good offer, they will move quickly. They did it with Luis Arraez last season. The Cubs farm system is loaded. So maybe that's one potential option.
So look, the Cubs farm system is loaded way more than the Mets, who've been mentioned for Sandy Alcantara. And Sandy Alcantara's good again. He's coming off Tommy John, but the velocity's back. The movement is back. He's walked a lot of people, walked four on opening day, four walks again this last time out. But he is a horse when he's healthy with a big-time arm. I was talking to a guy who knows prospects, knows systems really well, who says that James Triantos won't work. Kevin Alcantara might not work. It's Owen Casey and or Cade Horton. It's at least one of those guys, at the very least, either Casey or Horton and a big-time package of others.
I can't trade an Alcantara for an Alcantara?
Boy, that'd be fun, wouldn't it? Can we get Arizmendi Alcantara back just to make it a three-way?
Sweeten the deal?
Three-way trade, I should say, just to be clear.
Yes, you should be very clear about
that. I need to be extremely...
Just about the dungeon, huh?
Again, there's no dungeon. There's no sex going on in the dungeon.
Or the champagne room, to be clear once again. Yet.
I haven't visited yet.
What if the dungeon had a champagne room? What then? What? I mean, a double no sex?
Do you have to have champagne in the champagne room? It gives me headaches.
That's a good question. I don't know.
I don't think so. I think you can have whatever you
want.
Whatever
bottle you want.
If you're going back there, you can have whatever you want.
We'll ask you, Lawrence. You're our champagne room guy.
I am not your champagne room
guy. I'm sorry. You're our dungeon.
Champagne room.
You're our dungeon guy.
Not yet, but maybe.
All right. You check back when it is. John Heyman was on with Mully and
Bigsy.
Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks baseball with you.
He was so good talking baseball this morning. That guy, he knows his baseball
stuff.
Yeah,
because he was like a really good player when he was younger.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Biggsy was like a star pitcher when he was an amateur.
Wow. Well, Brad Biggs and Mike Mulligan were talking to John Heyman, who brought up some other names for the Cubs to possibly target and trade.
You don't see a good starter traded now. Nobody's going to want to send a message to their fans. We're trading our best starter in April, so it's not going to happen anytime soon. But as we get close to the deadline, and there are plenty of names that could be available beyond Alcantara. I did a list in the New York Post on Friday before this injury came up that I've got at least nine names and really more of very good pitchers who are, I would consider them frontline starters who could be available.
So who's on that? Like Tyler Anderson, Chris Bassett? Who are we talking about, John?
Yeah, I mean, it's an extensive list, but they're mostly maybes, right? Alcantara is the most likely, obviously, a standing pitcher with another year to go after this year, plus the option year, which means really two extra years. I know the Marlins are saying they're not trading him. Of course, who believes them? Nobody. So he's expected to be traded. It makes no sense that he's on that team. But beyond that, I mean, let's see what the Astros do. Framber Valdez is a free agent after the year. He's an outstanding pitcher. Pablo Lopez, the Twins are not off to a good start. His name was out there. Luis Castillo, I know the Mariners are saying right now they're not trading him, but he's been out there in the winter. Certainly, you're right on Bassett. Gausman also. Both Bassett and Gausman are pitching very, very well for the Blue Jays. I don't think the Blue Jays are going to give up that easily, so you know maybe they will not be dealt, but certainly a possibility. To me, the Cardinals are not a contender, and I'm not sure why Arenado's still there, but Sonny Gray, I think he's still there because he doesn't want to leave. He loves St. Louis. You know, I don't know what it is, the arch. I'm not sure, but he loves it.
Toasted ravioli? Like
yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, Brad Biggs for the win on toasted ravioli. Some good names in there, man. Pablo Lopez on the Twins.
I'd be on the train for Sonny Gray.
You know who I love in there the most? The money's a little hard to deal with. Luis Castillo. I freaking love that dude. Big time arm still. He's making 24 mil this year and next year and 27 and 25 if it vests in 28. But my God, that dude is still really good. And that changeup plays. And that means even if he loses some velocity, he's smart enough and the changeup is good enough that he will remain effective. I love that guy.
I'm going to try not to go overboard on this, but I do feel like there should be some urgency by the Cubs to do something. Now that you know, now that you're not waiting, now that you know that he's not coming back, if we take what Sahadev told us earlier and said, look, this is a front office that knows that, you know, this is kind of it if it doesn't go well, I don't have a problem with them if they feel like the next move that they make puts them in position to win the division. Because you can't make moves in April to say we're doing that to win the World Series, because it's such a crapshoot from a number standpoint. But if you're trying to make sure that you can get out ahead and maybe hopefully coast mm-hmm. ahead of a division that's not playing up to standard all the way through, then you should do that.
Well, that's a lot of names from Heyman, which, you know, the more names you got, the more it increases the possibility you could get one of them if one of those teams is going to be aggressive. I think they're going to use Jordan Wicks for a little while, use Javier Assad when he comes back healthy, use Colin Ray, those guys. And as long as Matthew Boyd is healthy and this effective, I don't think they're going to lose much.
I've been meaning to ask you, because you had moved earlier in the show. You was like, oh, you know what? Colin Ray's at the bullpen. Are you not a believer in him taking over as the fifth starter?
I'm a little...
Because, I mean, he at least has experience doing it.
Without a doubt. And he had a very nice year last year, and he's a good soldier. I think he's got more utility as a bulk guy to follow up after short starts, be your long guy, eat a whole bunch of innings whenever. Like, he's totally willing and amenable, and those guys are valuable in the modern bullpen. I think there's a higher ceiling for both Wicks and Assad, to me, for what they could do as starters.
Okay. That's fair enough. When we come back, if Bigsy was here,
yeah,
where was Mr. David?
I don't know.
Maybe Brad Biggs knows. Next on The Score.
There is a delightful little competition or journalistic rivalry between Brad Biggs and David Haw that you can often hear.
When David was at the Tribune and Brad was at the Sun-Times, they covered the beat during the same time. So, you know, those and Mully too, you know, like there's a lot of old football scribes on mm-hmm. that show. It makes for great football content for them.
I don't deal in rumors, Dave.
On the morning show. And I believe it's playful. There's a what I believe is some playful back and forth.
Morning, Dave. What's going on?
Dave.
Mr. David and Bigsy.
Dude, is David in his professional life, his personal life, and everywhere. That guy has the audacity to call him Dave. Call me Dave again. Call me Dave again.
Miss a little, miss a lot, Dave.
Mal.
And I don't want to bring up a topic that's going to make Mr. David upset, but his guy, Colson Montgomery, is really, really having a rough ride.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into all this stuff. Okay. We won't get into Colson.
Colson Montgomery above high A.
Yeah.
Okay. Above high A. Batting 207, and that's over 709 at bats going into yesterday.
But what is he hitting this year? He's not even hitting 90, right? He's
089 going into yesterday.
Oh, my God.
But so, and his stay in Double A was so brief.
Yeah.
Like it was assumed, oh, he's ready to be challenged and pushed. And
no, he's not.
And now he's not super young. Brad, is he 23 now?
He's in Charlotte,
which is a hitter's park.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That scares you. The other thing is,
and I'm sorry, and apologies to Mr. Dave.
Mr.
Dave.
Like Colson Montgomery, Mr. David, Indiana schoolboy legend.
Yeah, he's an Indiana boy.
Indiana schoolboy legend.
Mr. Dave. I mean, it's perfect.
Wasn't that a show, Mr. Dave, or something like that?
I don't know. You thinking of Super Dave? Super Dave
Maybe
Osborne?
I'm thinking of Super Dave.
He had a show briefly.
There's a show called Dave.
There is a show called
Lil Dicky.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lil Dicky. You know, it's Mr. Dave is just a beautiful mix of respect and complete disregard. It's a really healthy mix.
Yes, I am very, very impressed by Brad, a football writer, knowing that.
You are Mr. Baseball.
Well, I didn't just watch golf yesterday. And look up stats on Dave's guy Colson Montgomery.
But you did do that.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Rami with the assist. Mr. Show, but it was Bob and Dave.
Oh, right. Bob and David. Bob and Dave with Mr. Show.
Shout out to Rami for helping me out on that one.
Shout out to Bob Odenkirk and David Cross. It's one of the great shows of all time. I like the family sex store that they have on that show. It's one of my favorites.
You asked Bob about that.
I did. The family business was the sex toy store.
But I was looking through the rosters of the team, and there was one guy who's with the Blackhawks, this kid Green, who they signed yesterday, and he's supposed to play. They've got, what, two games left? Is that the Blackhawks season?
Blackhawks have two regular season games.
Yeah,
left, so,
and this kid's going to play in these games. Yeah. Well, yeah, thanks.
The Hawks aren't in the playoffs?
No. Yeah, are you sure?
I heard this stat.
Did they make the play-in?
No, they didn't even make the play-in.
That's a wrap.
Man, wow. Bigsy's good. It's good at radio.
I agree with him on a lot of stuff, including Colson Montgomery.
I know you do. I know you do. You and Biggs can hang out, smoke a cigar, play some bags down at TJ Donlin's, maybe.
I don't know if Biggsy ever played bags, no. But he was a man about town.
Yeah, he would hang out. He would hang out down there.
Yeah, those are good times. Yeah. I miss those times.
Yeah, man, it's good. That was good stuff.
Too bad it's not the way that training camps work anymore.
I'm in a good spot because I started a new Twitter account, Matt Spiegs. At Matt Spiegs, and I can follow Brad Biggs from there.
Does he know?
Until right now,
yeah,
when
we'll
you,
see.
When you told on yourself,
I think I might be all right.
I'm hopeful. It's not. I'm hopeful that there are two young ladies in the WNBA that the Sky can draft. One of them is Anissa Morrow, Chicago's very own. The other one is Haley Van Lith. I think Morrow will be gone. I think it's possible that Haley Van Lith finds herself in a Sky uniform. Something to keep in mind for tonight.
You're a fan of her. She's come up many times for you.
She's a killer.
And she's bounced around taking control many different schools.
And they could use a player like her. We'll see. She was teammates with Angel Reese down at LSU, but she's a killer.
It is my anniversary today. Happy anniversary to my lovely wife. And I am off tomorrow. To celebrate such things.
Ryan McGuffey's going to be in, and we're going to have a blast. We're going to have a good time hanging out, telling stories, talking baseball, all sorts of stuff. For Shane, he's got a great cap on. And for Tanny, for my partner, Matt Spiegel. Uh-huh.
I can't wait to see what you have to say about me tomorrow.
Half a beard.
I told Shane he's got to start collecting different types of hats to really stand out. He's got a peacock it around here. You know what I mean?
That's what I think he should do.
And he's got half the beard he used to be. I shouldn't have tried that.
All right, go enjoy your anniversary.
Good call.
For Speaks, I'm Lauren saying thanks so much for the love and support you show us. We will try to repay the favor tomorrow. Ryan McGuffey will be in on Spiegel and Holmes tomorrow at 2 here on The Score.
Wow, that was great. What a moment.